Sahana vavatu, sahana bhunaktu, sahaviryan karavavahai, tejasvinavaritamastomavidivishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay, page 7. The word anukulyena, with favorableness or friendliness, is the descriptive element of anushilanam, or service. It is necessary in order to limit the definition of bhakti, right? Because otherwise, bhakti, because as we're saying, karma and gyan, they don't function without bhakti, right? Unless you have some dedication to your effort in karma or your effort in gyan, you won't get any result, right? Because you have to please Krishna, though you may be pleasing Krishna simply as rules and regulations, the laws of nature, as Brahman, like this. But the point is that has to be there. So when we say anukulyena, then that means it's favorable to Krishna, and friendly means it's in line with what he wants. Right? So then, that necessarily limits the definition. Now we know we're talking about pure devotional service. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because technically, if you're looking at it from the level like we see in 11th canto, all there is devotional service. It's just whether people know that they're performing it or not. Right? Now, when they're performing it on their own, not under the direction of the pure devotees, then it's not agyata sukriti, it's just piety. And they only get material benefit. And they stay in the cycle of samsara. Right? Now, when it's under the direction of pure devotees, then it's called agyata sukriti. Then it's unknown pious activities, means it gives them devotional service, like taking part in a festival or some other program, hearing the holy name or seeing the Hare Krishnas across the street. Hey, Hare Krishna, you know, like that kind of stuff. Does that make sense? Because it's Krishna's world, we have to remember. It's his laws, it's his nature. So it functions the way he says. And so we can take part in it. And in taking part, if we do so in a proper way, a correct way, then we're going to get decent results in whatever area that we're applying ourselves in. If it's in karma, we'll get it in karma. If it's in gyan, in gyan. Within karma, what's the aspect of karma you're going for? You're working in economics, it'll come in there. You're working in politics, it'll come there. In the senses, it'll... Does that make sense? So we're having to limit it down that we mean pure devotion, because we have to remember this definition that's being given here, and the book itself is meant for devotees. It's establishing pure devotion, but it's not just for sadhakas. It's the same principles that work on the higher levels as on the lower by the principle of the, Satkaryavad. Means whatever is there in Krishna, in his nature, is there in whatever is expanded. So the material world will still function in the same way. But because the living entities don't agree to see Krishna, they don't get the credit for working with Krishna, even though that's all there is. Does that make sense? So we're looking at it at another level here. Does that make sense? So you need to define it in order to understand that we're talking about favorable devotional service. Yes?
I wonder if you could confirm, agyata sukriti which is connected to devotional service.
Yes.
Punya or pious activity is connected to Varnashram.
It's connected to following the laws given by Krishna. Like that. So it can be also in austerity, it can be all those things are covered there, but it's Varnashram will be considered one of the religious principles, but they're all together. Now, even if someone is doing those without knowing them, they're still going to get some effect from that. You know, it's just like, let's say there's a materialist who is not following the Vedas, but he does his best to try to take care of the family. He'll get that kind of piety for that. Right? Not as much as if he understands the Shastra saying he's doing it out of those duties, he'll get more. Right? But the difference being is, in one, in the karma and jnan, even though it only functions because of the effect of bhakti, bhakti is only an anga of karma and jnan. Right? It means it's not about Krishna. It's not about pleasing Krishna as a goal. It's part of the process. I have my goal. I, let's say, want to get material facility. So then I'm worshiping Krishna. But once I have done that worship and gotten my goal, I stop worshiping Krishna because it was just part of the process. Just like I'm cooking, I use the frying pan. When I'm done with that, I've gotten the effect, I don't use the frying pan anymore. It's not about the frying pan. So in karma and jnana, bhakti that's there is subservient to, even though it's the one that's actually making it work, but because of the mentality of the living entity, it's subservient to the karma or jnana. Because as soon as they obtain their goal, they drop that part. Right? It's a very important aspect to understand. Because that's how you can tell the difference in what's pure devotion, what's not, what's all these different things. Right? So pure devotion means it's about Krishna. It doesn't stop. It's focused just on Krishna. Right? Now, Agyata Sukriti will be those individuals who are taking part without knowing that kind of devotional service. Does that make sense? The devotees are doing devotional service to please Krishna, right? On the devotional platform. Someone takes part in that unknowingly. That's called Agyata Sukriti. Does that make sense? Because it's actually connected to real devotional service. Well, the others, it is devotional service, but it's not called devotional service. Right? So it won't be a general way you'll express it. We're explaining it now in that way. Right? But that's not actually how it's applied. Because in application, it's not about pleasing Krishna. It's not according to the authority to please Krishna in devotional service. It's just you're pleasing the Lord simply because he's the big boss and you want the big boss to sign your papers so you can get what you want. And once you've signed the papers, you're not going back to the office. It's not called bhakti. Even though what you're actually doing is within the framework of bhakti. Does that make sense? So that's the... You know, it's just like, let's say you have this little, you know, plastic cup with that plastic lid on it. Right? You pull off that lid and you pour in some hot water. Why are you making that arrangement? Is it because you want to cook? No, you don't want to cook at all. You understand? But you do have to do some cooking. You have to boil the water and actually pour it into the cup. Does it make sense? So it's not about cooking at all. It's about avoiding cooking. So in the karmis and jnanis, it's not about Krishna. It's not about devotional service, but they still have to perform some to make it work because it's Krishna's energy. Right? But once it's done, that's it. Hari Bol. Right? No pots to wash, nothing to arrange, nothing, you know. Go sit on the couch. You know, you use your plastic spork and, you know, throw it out when you're done. You do have to take out the garbage, though. Does this make sense? Do we understand what we're working with here?
Foldable plastic spork.
No, you don't want the foldable because that's something worth keeping. Then you have to wash it, you have to put it in the drawer. You want one of those ones that just comes with it taped onto the side so you can throw it out.
Inside they have the foldable.
Oh, inside they have. Oh, okay. So he's functioning on a higher level of realization here. I guess all those days alone in Bombay, right? Okay. He does look thinner, doesn't he? Yeah.
Yeah. it's always a question of intent.
It's a question of intent, exactly.
The difficulty is to keep the intent constantly.
That's why association of devotees. That's why that's the most important element, because they have that intent. By associating, then you develop that intent. So that's why he's bringing out here anukul yena, with favorableness or friendliness. You know, so then you understand the type that he's dealing with, because he wants to narrow, limit the definition. Right? Because for the Uttamadhikari, he sees everyone as servant of Krishna. And they're taking part, following the modes of nature, so in this way they're serving Krishna by serving the modes, which is, you know, serving Maya, which is serving Krishna. So they don't see anyone who's not a devotee. But here he's defining it in a way that it's favorable, so it's pure devotional service. Does that make sense? Because we said it's the book is written for both those who have perfected themselves and those who are sadhakas. So it has to be, the definitions have to work for both. Is that we're good?
Maharaj, once you explain all of this matter using the second half of the everybody is following my path in all respects. So
yes. Yeah, everyone's following the path. It's just a matter of, by intent, as Prabhu was saying, that's how far they'll get. They're following the path towards Krishna, but they only want to get to the heavenly planets, only to liberation. So that's all and that's all it'll be called. Right? It won't be called bhakti because it's not going to the goal. So what is your goal? Since your goal is fruitive, it's called karma. Since your goal is liberation, it's called jnana. So only when the goal is pleasing Krishna eternally, then it's called bhakti. So it's about where your goal is, what the intent is of your knowledge and endeavor to get what goal. Right? So in other words, for them, worshipping Krishna and getting his pleasure is not a final goal. It's an interim goal. That by that, then we can get the facility we want. Like Hiranyakashipu worships Lord Brahma because he thinks he's the supreme. No, he thinks himself to be supreme. But the point is he can't arrange certain things that he wants, but Brahma can. So by worshiping Brahma being pleased, he gets what he wants. And then we don't see him worshiping Brahma after that.
He's
Who? Hiranyakashipu? So it didn't work out, did it? Yeah, so. What do you call it? That'll teach him, right?
Maharaj, what you can say similarly, what you just said. Nobody calls Hiranyakashipu's worship of Lord Brahma as Acharya Upasana. It's never considered to be like he's taking shelter of the Acharya, Sampradaya Acharya.
No. But we see Narad Muni talks about how they'll become absorbed in Krishna. So after they're killed by Krishna, they'll go to the Brahman. And from there, then in that position, because they've been killed by Krishna, they can remember Krishna. And then they can from there progress to Vaikuntha. Like that. But the point is that's not going to work for us. Right? You know what I'm saying? Because that's everything's Krishna, but it's not that he personally comes to run you over on the road. When you see that Mack truck, when you look up at the driver, it's not going to be Krishna. Right? You know, does that make sense? Yeah. It is necessary. Okay. The definition of bhakti cannot be established with a disagreeable attitude towards Krishna, pratikulya. The word anukul yena in conjunction with Krishnanushilanam means behavior pleasing to Krishna. Pratikulya means the opposite, behavior disagreeable to Krishna. Right, so, because I mentioned before, it's about cultivating Krishna. But as part of the process, it's cultivating not doing things that are not pleasing to Krishna. Right? So the direct is cultivating that remembrance of Krishna. And the negative is cultivating, avoiding those things that are not favorable for that remembrance. You understand? So we see that even the side we're looking at, how we're looking at the negative. It's a different perspective. From the material, you'll just look at, this is wrong, don't do that, because things that are wrong are bad. Not that it's not pleasing to Krishna, that's why it's bad. No, it's just bad because it's against the rules. You see the difference? We're not actually seeing it in its natural light. Why something's impious? Because it's not pleasing to Krishna. And what's pious is pleasing to Krishna. but it's only actually pleasing if it's done in connection with Krishna. So in other words, activities that are pleasing to Krishna that would be used in bhakti, then those are called pious. Activities that would not be used in service to Krishna, right? Those are not favorable. Does that make sense? So even we see as worshipping from the platform of Vrindavan, those things that aren't favorable for Braja Bhakti, those are left out, even though they may be bona fide for other Vaishnavas. You want to get to Vaikuntha, then there's things that you may be doing that you would not use for Braja Bhakti. Right? And they're not things like going to Mangal Arati or chanting your rounds. It's stuff like, you know, doing meditation on Dwarka, worshipping Rukmini Devi. Like that. Does that make sense? It's that kind of stuff. So what we're given, that's bona fide. That's good. The definition of anukulya as, quote, unquote, pleasing to Krishna is both too extensive and too limiting. For instance, the action, anushilanam, of a demon attacking Krishna is the rasa of fighting, yudhavira rasa, derived from utsaha rati, from Krishna's perspective. Right? So that is favorable to Krishna. It is pleasing for him, since he takes pleasure in fighting with them. Yudhavira rasa is expressed in the following verse. Right? Because we have to make the distinction here. Does that make sense? That's why he's saying it's too broad and too narrow. Because then it's too narrow, that doesn't include that. Right? The gentle and chaste Gandhari, who was the daughter of King Subala of Kandahar, or Gandhara, followed her husband, seeing that he was going to the Himalaya Mountains, which are the delight of those who have accepted the staff of the renounced order, like fighters who have accepted a good lashing from the enemy. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.13.30. Right? So that aspect, that flavor that's there. Are we all good here? Or is it? Yeah? Okay. So we see is that there's a particular taste there. Right? So this yudhavira, it's a particular taste. So for those who fight with Krishna like that, then that taste is there. But then, yeah. Again, an illustration of the definition of being too limited, if anukulyena means pleasing to Krishna, is given. When Yashoda left Krishna and went to take the milk off the fire, Krishna was not pleased. Thus, Yashoda would be excluded from the definition of bhakti. The following example is given.
Right. Hmm. So this point is too extensive and too limiting. Means it's not this, it's not that.
Yeah, it means that when you have to be careful not to take it too far, and you have to be careful not to take it too limited. In other words, you just don't take the words pleasing to Krishna. You have to understand how that's applied. So you can see is that same principle is there in the, what do you call it? Yes, say everywhere, but in Vedanta Sutra, it's very much showing that aspect. But in there, it's not, we see the acharyas will connect it with the pastimes and all that.
So we basically take the definitions of acharyas and follow
yes.
them.
Yes, we do how they explain it and all that, but we have to understand is that sometimes it seems like there's contradiction, but there's never contradiction. Because you have the right mood, your right attitude, then the definition, you understand how it works. Because it's not about logic. It's about Krishna being pleased that he, reveals to us how that applies. And if we follow the process, you know, this is one of the processes that is recommended. So we get together, we discuss the Bhagavatam, we discuss these things. And then we see with the acharyas, it's always been a Vedic tradition, but with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada, they formalized it into, you know, certain books and certain, you know, how the books progress. And we follow that, then through that, doing that to please Krishna, then he's pleased. So, okay, the following example is given. Being very angry and biting his reddish lips with his teeth, Krishna, with false tears in his eyes, broke the container of yogurt with a piece of stone. Then he entered a room and began to eat the freshly churned butter in a solitary place. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.9.6. In order to prevent the definition from being too extensive, the first case, and too limiting, the second case, The definition of anukulya should be explained as devoid of hostility on the part of the performer. This will exclude the demons because they have hostility in the form of hatred for Krishna. This definition will also not exclude Yashoda because she is devoid of hostility to Krishna. Right? So then you're giving a definition of what that favorable means. So it's not just the pleasing to Krishna, because then you see is he'll use the moods of being pleased or not pleased depending upon what's there. But it's a matter of the performer of devotion, they don't have hostility. Right? So that brings in another aspect. So we see with that again, the intent. What is the intent? Because if there's hostility, then the intent was different. So Mother Yashoda wanted to please Krishna by going and taking off the fire, the pot of milk that was boiling over, because that pot of milk had in it the milk from that special cow that they always, you know, offered that milk to Krishna. Right? Because Krishna, that cow is very dear to Krishna. So it's favorable, her intent. But just the timing of it, then it's not pleasing to Krishna. And then from that unfolds this whole pastime. Yes, yes. Yeah, and then you hear, you become inspired. So we see is what we're... Yeah. Yes. Therefore, let bhakti be defined in terms of anukulya, a friendly attitude directed to Krishna. The word anushilanam, which is modified by anukulya, is thus unnecessary, because bhakti can be defined merely as favorable attitude to Krishna. This objection is rejected, right? Someone may say, right? Okay, so that's why the quotations. It's probably always to say, some may say, like that. Okay, therefore let bhakti be trying anukulya, friendly attitude. We don't need anushilanam, right? The service, we just have to have the favorable attitude. You don't need the service. Right, because it's just the mood, the bhav. We see that, you know, it, you know, quite Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, from his time, we're directly dealing with it. Because in the pure Vaishnav society, you don't have all these distractions. But once you come out and try to get the broader range, then you see with Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you're having to deal with all these upper sampradaya kind of ideas. So their thing will be, is that we just need the mood, the bhav. We don't actually have to do the external service. So it's a very standard misunderstanding, like that. You know, you don't have to chant, it just has to be there in your mind. You don't have to use beads, you don't have to do anything that would resemble anything to do with Krishna consciousness or any of the activities. You just have to have that bhav in your heart.
Be in the bhav, this
is. Be in the bhav, yeah. As if you're going to... Well, actually, the you're pronouncing it wrong. It's not be in the bhav, it's be in the bhav. Because bhava means the material world. You know, be in the bhav.
So
anushilanam. Yeah, I'm bhaving here. Yes.
Anushilanam means favorable. No, anukulyena means favorable. And
yes.
Anushilanam means?
The service obtainable only by, is a transformation of the Krishna Srup Shakti. In other words, it's bhakti, the activity. The activities of devotion.
So anushilanam is activities and anushilanam.
Yes, so favorable activities.
So it should be favorable and should have activities.
Yes. Like that. Because that's why it's nectar of devotion. It's activities, yes.
Anushilanam is defined in the beginning first.
Yes. It's, you see it on the page before. Like that, how you say. You have to remember that what we're working with here. Manda sumanda matayo, manda pagya. It's like your memory is short. Like if I ask you now what you had for lunch, and it's kind of, well, let me think. Oh, yeah.
Did I
have lunch? Did I have lunch today? Do I ever eat lunch? What's lunch?
Because when you say bhakti, it actually means active devotion, service, and not being passive.
Bhakti, we see, is also described as the engaging the senses in the Lord's service. Right? So there's many aspects, but he's bringing out this specific verse that defines the pure devotion. Right? this objection is rejected, since even a pot is devoid of hostility to Krishna. Right? It just sits there, right? And is therefore pleasing to him, but cannot be described as having bhakti. Therefore, the word anushilanam is also necessary. Right? So it's just, so do we catch here just as a background of that, the technicalness of the looking at the Vedanta Sutra, then one can appreciate, because it's the same technicalness, it's just this is presented in a pleasant, you know, in a practical, pleasant.
In Yashoda's kitchen.
Hmm? Yeah, in Yashoda's kitchen.
Can
like
we
that.
Object to this?
Can we object for what?
The
object
the pot. The pot thing.
The pot.
Because we described in Vedanta Sutra, the pots are different. Like Krishna likes the copper pot, for example, or likes this.
Well, of course you can take it farther there, but they're only bringing that up. Because then as soon as they bring that up, you can also, if you want, you can take that route about what kind of pot. You know, for what kind of purpose. You can, yes. It's just a matter of that if they catch it there, then if not, then you go into that.
So from this it's Vedanta Sutra.
Yes.
It's a continuation.
Yes. So So in order to define the highest bhakti, uttama bhakti, two further descriptive phrases are added. What type of anushilanam is this? It should be devoid of desires for obtaining results other than bhakti. Right, because that means bhakti is exclusive. That's the whole point that makes the uttama bhakti what it is the exclusiveness of it. See, it's only when at the point of purva rag, right, in smarana dasa, that, yes, no?
Yes.
Yeah. Then we can say it starts to become focused just on Krishna. Before that, in meditation, one may be very absorbed, but it hasn't come to that point where it is the quality of it is enough to get you that direct association of Krishna. Because Krishna doesn't have a problem in focusing on anything all the time. Right? He doesn't have these lackings. So therefore, to interact with him has to be a constant thing, not one day it's there, one day it's not. That's why when one's in those phases, that's called sadhana. So even within bhava, though it's not on the level of vaidhi, it still has its sadhana in that these first three stages bring you to the point where it's exclusive.
So can we say that this definition, it actually does not apply as such to what we are doing?
No, it does apply, because that's what we're trying to obtain. That's why he uses the word iti. I'm not sure, will that come up here? I think Jiva Goswami explains that.
Iti means the else?
Anyavilashita shunyam. Anyavilashita. Anyavilashita. The ita means, I think Baladev explains it, that, and this devotional service as explained here, and the ita means, and those that are in pursuance of this. So we're in the, we're covered under the iti clause. Like that. Does that make sense? That's where we come in. So, because you have this in mind, then in the performance of our sadhana, even though it's not on this platform, at opportunities where we could function like this, we try.
So as and you said, it's an intent?
Yes.
But when we function,
right,
whatever we do, we call it Mishra Bhakti.
We just call it Bhakti, because Bhakti technically, when you're talking about Vaidhi, that means Bhakti. We just call it Bhakti. Because when it's actually in its natural state, in its full state, we call it prema. So basically what's below prema is called bhakti. It's the ultimate form of bhakti, but it's designated as prema. But below that is called bhakti. And then so this therefore has to, these definitions and that have to apply for those who are in bhava bhakti sadhana and those who are in vaidhi sadhana.
Okay, so they're applicable to all?
They're all to all. Because we see as you're dealing with one thing, rati is what is extending down through vaidhi. Like that. So that's why it works. It's the potency that makes it work. Because only prema can make things work. But that form of prema, then we're not dealing with that. So we're dealing with the bud. And then we're dealing with a portion of that bud. Right? Does that make sense? You know, that Krishna, yes, is... He has his original form, then he has his swamsa, and then the kala, you know, or parts of that, you know, so that's how it comes down. So its pure form is then prema, then its budding form is bhava, and then even, you know, just portions of that, then that's shraddha up to bhava. Right? Shraddha through a shakti. So, yeah. And so then we're getting a definition that works on all these levels. Because one has to be able to appreciate that it's seamless when it goes through. Because much of the time we can make the mistake that we're changing the process as we go. You know, it's just like I'm more advanced, I don't have to do this or that. The point is no. It's a matter of it's one process. And so what's changing is the consciousness, not what you're doing. It's not that we're sitting down here slogging away, cutting things up, throwing them into pots, putting them on fires and pushing them around with the spoon. But, you know, Mother Jashoda doesn't do that. Right? She sits there with her wand and makes it work, or she just sits in the next room, you know, how you say, reading her gossip magazine, and the cooking goes on. You know what I'm saying? So it's the same, the secondary aspects are the same. The difference is in the quality of the consciousness. That's why we're International Society for Krishna Consciousness, not International Society for Wearing Bed Sheets or, you know, that kind of thing. It's that, you know, it's the consciousness that's the main thing. Then all the other things come in support of that consciousness. Because we just do what they do. As close, whatever applies to us that they do in Braj, we do. And what doesn't apply here, then we don't do.
And always on the morning glance, as you explained, that first Uttam Bhakti will be defined. So that has been defined, first Uttam Bhakti. That's a goal. And then it will come down.
Yes, it'll be applied.
Yes.
But the definitions will apply to all of them.
Yes.
Sometimes the difficulty is to see that there are different levels of consciousness, different perspectives, and sometimes we are attached to only one.
Yes, yes. And it's fine that we're situated in one as long as we appreciate that there's beyond that, what's being described. Then we situate ourselves in our position and act accordingly. But as we're able to start acting on the next level up, we're situated on this level, but we start acting in that level. So then you're functioning in two levels. You're situated in one, functioning in the other. Then, when you're able to be situated in the higher one, you give up the lower one. You know, that's the example of the inchworm. They put the front down when it's solid, then it picks up the back foot. Then they're both in the same place. Then it reaches again in the next level. So that's how one progresses. One doesn't jump. You know, it's that you're at this and you start doing those things. Then when those are natural, then you... Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. So what type of anushilanam is this? It should be devoid of desires for obtaining results other than bhakti. That's the point. One has that faith that only bhakti gives the results. And so you're not interested in anything else other than bhakti. It doesn't mean like karma and jnana that you're convinced that, yes, by performing the devotional activities, I'll get better karma, I'll get better jnana. It means that whatever I want to get from karma and jnana is already included in bhakti. So I'm not interested in karma and jnana, I'm only interested in bhakti. Right? Bhakti will fulfill the actual needs of the soul. Because when we're talking about karma and jnana, we're addressing the conditioned nature of the living entity, not the constitutional. So Mother Jashoda does not need to go to the heavenly planets, and she does not need to become liberated. Right? And that she is liberated, she really couldn't care less. So then, the devotee who remembers and induces others to remember the Lord, who takes away heaps of sin, develops symptoms like hair standing on end by bhakti, which has sprung from bhakti. Srimad Bhagavatam 11.3.31. Right? So bhakti comes from bhakti. It doesn't come from somewhere else. Nothing else can produce it. That's why it's important that it should be devoid of desires for obtaining results other than bhakti. Because then one may be thinking that these other things are the favorable condition to produce bhakti, but bhakti only comes from bhakti. Right? That's why it's causeless mercy. We didn't do something to qualify. Right? Just the devotees, they, to please Lord Chaitanya, go out, do something, we happen to come across that, and then that Jñāta Sukriti builds until it develops Shraddha. Right?
Maharaj, can we say that when a devotee has full faith that bhakti is the main thing, it can be considered like a pure devotee?
Yes, that's considered pure devotional service. Because pure devotional service begins at nishtha. Because nishtha means you've crossed anartha nivritti, where it's not about the material desires. Now maybe still, because Prabhupada says 75%. So it's still 25% is there, but the point is it's under control, that you're steady. Like that. You're working with it. You're engaging it. And that steadiness, so the point is when you have that kind of faith, it will remove the anartas. The faith will remove the anartas. We're thinking, no, when the inertia is removed, I'll have faith. But it doesn't work like that. You have money, you get the goods. No, when I get the goods, then I'll give the money. It's not going to happen. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Yeah. Show me the money, right? That's what Nityananda Prabhu said. Says, you can have this prema, the only price you have to pay is Shraddha. Okay. All right.
It's a new phone. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, whose phone plays this? You know, this is the jazz stuff. So we're trying to define in between here so we know exactly what we're looking for. Not that we have that, but we know what to look for. So we know, we can be aware of when we're doing things correct, when we're not. And then we can tell the difference in the taste that we get from doing it correctly and from not. And then with time, and by that association, we start to take what is favorable. Like that. So it's a gradual process. But we're crossing a great distance. Right? So the higher you go, the quicker you're going. Right? But any advancement is special. So even that little advancement is special. But as you go, it gets more and more. Because you'll think, oh, it's so far away. But the thing is yes, maybe in our position, but as you advance, it's not. It's quicker. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Yes. Yes. The point works. Pure, you can have third class pure devotees, right? Because they're just, their focus and determination is so great to serve, like that. So that's not a problem. Right? So it can be, because this definition, that's the point of this definition. It can work anywhere. Okay. Bhakti, which aims at achieving bhakti, is proper. And bhakti which aims at achieving other goals is improper. In this verse, the phrase anyavilasa shunyam has not been used. Instead, the phrase anyavilasita shunyam has been chosen. This means devoid of other desires which are as deep-rooted as one's nature. In death-threatening situations, a devotee may say, O Lord, please save me, your devotee, from danger at this time. Because it is a sudden temporary desire, it is not harmful to his bhakti. That is because his desire rises beyond his control, opposite his devotional nature. That desire is not his nature. Right, so you can be situated by this. So you see here is that iti being added here. It's very important. Because then it includes us. Yeah, that's the whole point. So the verse is applying to Uttama Bhakti, but when we add the Ita in it, it means then we're able to take part in that process to develop that Uttama Bhakti.
Chai.
Chai, yes. Okay.
What's the origin of this verse?
It's nectar devotion.
But I mean, is it spoken by Rupada Swami?
That I know of it. I think it's that I know of it's himself. It's just a verse of nectar devotion.
11th verse.
11th verse. So it's 1111. Yeah, so you can remember it's all ones. You just if you don't quite get it right, you just have to move the dots around, you know, until you get it right.
I mean, it's written by him. It's composed by him.
Yes, it's composed by him. Yeah, it's not quoting from another literature. It's like that. So that's the point is the nectar of devotion is taking and quoting from the Bhagavatam. And then these are like his commentaries on it. Then we see the acharyas after him. Their commentaries are explaining his commentary. And so then they'll give definitions and they'll refer back to the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu.
Because sometimes through the reading of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, there are verses of nectar devotion that pop up.
Mm-hmm.
And Prabhupada mentioned in Short Prabhupada, he said, it's because these verses have been spoken for a long time. Even before Rupa Goswami was even on the scene, these verses were already being used.
Hmm.
And then he borrowed them to...
Means it's... How do you say? There may be standard definitions, so it's not necessarily a verse directly from the Veda, but it's how it'll be used. And because it's like that, then he may document it because it's such a nice thing. Then, you know, he'll be known for it. But we don't need to go too far in that way because who knows who came as who before and who was speaking. You know, it's just like Jayadev Goswami. Where did he come from? He just appears so that these things are spoken so that the Sampradaya can use them. Does that make sense? So that's why one doesn't go too far back into those things unless you really want to, how you say, churn through all 18 Puranas, and then in one story, someplace you'll find something, you know, and then, you know, like that. Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
But for us, we'll accredit him with him.
Yeah.
But the point is this, he may be taking it from definitions that have been used by the Vaishnavas in the Sampradayas, but aren't necessarily written in the verses or in the tika, the commentaries themselves, you know, like that. People are speaking them. It's that. It just makes it just like, let's say, the verse. What is it? Third verse in the Mangalacharan, Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata. You know where that comes from? It's just it's used, so we use it, but it's not accredited anywhere. You know, so like that, then so many times it's used, and so and it exactly says what's there. It's accepted by the acharyas, and so then it becomes like that. So that's why we look at what's in the Veda, then comes down into the Shruti, comes to the Smriti, the tradition, then what the acharyas then say, and then how that comes to us through the devotees. Like that, then that will be the basis of what we do. Then we apply what applies to us in our situation, and then it works very nice. So if it's coming from there, then we're good. Does that make sense? So even if it's come before, it's like I think Koresh, when Ramanujacharya was taking darshan of Rangaji, so he's you know standing there and facing the deity, right? So then you have the door, you know, and you have Jayan Vijaya and Ganga Jamuna, all that on the doorposts. So then Koresh is standing there at the doorpost looking at Ramanujacharya, right? And Ramanujacharya is kind of pointing out, Rangaji's over there. You know, he's the deity. Says, and then he makes the point is, yes, he's your deity. You know him. I don't know him. I know you. Does that make sense? So that whole point is we don't know all before. We just know that Rupa Goswami has given it. Now, if Prabhupada points out it's something from before, then that's how we know. But it's still, we know this verse because it's come to us via our acharya down through the parampara from Rupa Goswami. You know, set like that. So it shouldn't change the flavor, because one has to be careful. Is sometimes in looking at these things historically, then they'll go, "Oh, well, it's not really him; it's those things before," and we'll put the emphasis on that. But then that's then we miss the point. Point is this: even if it is, it comes to us through our acharya.
It's even more authoritative.
Yes. 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 Okay. How is Anushilanam further described? It is not covered by jnana or karma or other items. But it's just in case you think, well, what about, no, or other items. You know, karma jnana covers everything, but just to make sure, or other items. Right? Jnana means inquiry about the undifferentiated Brahman, not inquiry about the worshipable Lord. So when we study Brahman, we're studying Parabrahman. So we're seeing how Krishna as Brahman is affecting things. But here, this jnana is, you're just inquiring about the knowledge of Brahman, up to Brahman, and that's all. You're not seeing the personal feature. So that's unfavorable. For knowledge of the Lord is necessary for bhakti. Karma refers to daily and periodic duties enjoined by the Smriti scriptures, not to the services offered to the Lord for devotional activities, or anushilanam. So we're just doing it because it's supposed to be done. The scriptures recommend. And if you follow the scriptures, you'll get good facility. That's karma. When you're doing these activities because they're recommended for service to Krishna, that's bhakti. Maybe the same activity. But the point is this: what's our motive for doing it? What's our following of it? We see, does that make sense? So if we're rejecting the position of simply dharma because it should be done, that's the mode of goodness, right? Then, but it's supposed to be pure goodness. It's about pleasing Krishna, right? Definitely already has rejected those things that were creating standards that have nothing to do with Krishna, right? They're not recommended by scripture. It's just that ourselves and our circle, they do this, and so we're not in the platform that Rupa Goswami is quoting what we're doing, so therefore. Does that make sense? So we have to be able to distinguish that. The word adi indicates engaging in sacrifices, renunciation, yoga, shankya, and other such items. These items should not cover anushilana. Right? So they can be there. But them being there cannot cover bhakti. They have to be supportive of. They're secondary activities. They're religious activities. So those activities, if in service of Krishna, then they become valuable. But if they're not used in service to Krishna, they will simply distract one.
No.
Yes?
It means that basically we cannot understand what other people are doing because we don't really know their motive.
Yes. So you have to be very careful. So you go by symptoms. Right? So if there's some symptoms that are not recommended, then you avoid that. But you don't necessarily just, you know, somebody comes to the temple in karmi clothes, you don't judge that they're not devotional. Right? Does that make sense? But at the same time, is if they are trying to say it has nothing to do, it's just the bhav and all that, so we don't care. So therefore, since it doesn't matter what you wear, and so therefore we'll only wear Western clothes, now we have a problem, because now it's against that point that the acharya said. Does that make sense? Because the one's work is he has to maintain the family. To do that, he has to have an occupation. The occupation, he has to wear this kind of clothes. And so therefore, he's wearing that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because the thing is, you have, your formal wear, then you have casual Friday, right? But devotional Sunday is not during the work day, so you won't see that there. So then this doesn't. Yes. No? Yeah. Okay. The word shunya, devoid, is not used in the second descriptive phrase, as it was in the first, namely anyavilashita shunyam. The intention of using anavritam instead of shunya is to forbid only those types of jnana and karma which conceal bhakti. Because otherwise, if you overemphasize that, then people will say they'll just throw everything out. Right? Performing nitya karmas, daily duties with faith, out of fear of sin, if one does not perform them under the authority of rules, is a covering on bhakti. Right? So in other words, we're looking at it because it's a sin, but it's not a sin because it's not pleasing to Krishna. It's a sin because you're breaking the rule. There's a difference. Right? So when we begin devotional service, we'll put the emphasis on there. You're following the rules, that's good, following that. And that's the level we're at. But we're talking here about pure devotional service where it's not about that. It's about that it's about bhakti and about the pursuance of bhakti. And therefore one avoids that which is not favorable to bhakti. It's not because of the sin. We think that it's wrong because of the sin. No, it's wrong because it's not bhakti. Does that make sense? So there's a difference there. And so that's why you see the Vaishnavas, if someone's doing something wrong, they try to help them situate themselves within actual proper favorable devotional service. It's not about a punishment. That's what the sixth canto is about. It's not about that. The Yamadutas were bewildered because that's what they deal with. That's their job. Right? People do something wrong, they punish them. So then why is it here he's done something wrong, he's not getting punished? He's chanting the holy name. Okay, he's chanting the holy name. That's nice. That's a good thing. What about all the bad stuff? No, but the chanting, that is beyond. That's what you're supposed to be doing. That's nice. He's doing what he's supposed to be. What about all the bad? That's a covering of bhakti. You understand? So that's what you're talking for. You know, the eternal damnation, all these different things. These are all modern constructs that people come up with. That means they're, modern meaning they're not Vedic. Right? And within the Vedic, that even people there, the smartas and all, they get distracted by this also because they're karmis. They're situated. Right? So we use the term karmi as a very general rule, like that. Because technically karmi means one who's following the Veda and is attached to karma kanda. Someone who's not following the Veda, and that technically they're vikarmis, you know, or akarmis. And you either have a very large firefly in your pocket, or your phone light is on. Performing nitya karma, with faith, out of fear of sin, if one does not perform them under the rules, authority of rules, is a covering on bhakti, right? So there's faith. You're following the shastra, so we're talking about someone on the third level of consciousness. Right? So it's still a covering for bhakti, because bhakti is on the fifth level. As well, performing them with faith that they will produce bhakti is a covering on bhakti. Right? That's what we've been speaking on for the last some time, is that, no, only when everybody behaves nicely and a good, and we're seen in a good light by the general public, then bhakti will flourish, then the movement will go to new levels and this, and then we'll do all that. That's a covering on bhakti. Because we're thinking the material piety is what makes bhakti. You understand? So that's why these things cover, that's why they bewilder, that's why they're not inspiring. You hear those things, they're not inspiring. They don't inspire bhakti. Because even though one says that, no one's any nicer. You know? I mean, practicing crocodile grins, that would be But the problem is others practice crocodile grins, they make money. We do crocodile grins and make no money. What's the point? Huh? I mean, that's why those guys have crocodile grins, is to make money. When they go home and they see their family, there's real smiles. Right? Huh? Yeah. However, a great devotee is not excluded from pure bhakti by performing shraddha ceremonies to the pitris, if it is done without faith in their absolute nature, just to teach the common people. Right? Because the common people, they'll not do it. So therefore, all these things, the varnashram, all these things are there because that's what's required for the general persons to connect themselves to the Vedic system, connect themselves to Krishna, regulate their life, accept all these different things. But the point is for them it's not a covering. Because they see it's coming from Krishna, it's just pleasing to Krishna. When Krishna comes, he follows varnashram. That's Goloka means human pastimes. Vaikuntha means God pastimes. So human pastimes means the varnashram system and all those religious principles. So that's what Krishna does. That's why they're favorable. Does that make sense? But it's only because you see them in relation to Krishna. You don't see them in relation to Krishna, then not so. They're not. Then they distract.
It's inspiring for everyone.
So everyone can inspire someone. Yes. It works nicely. Well, if you use these political platitudes, it only inspires those who those particular words and those particular combinations they find pleasing, which is extremely narrow. They're a very vocal bunch, right? Before there was, I'm not sure when it came out, there was a phrase, the silent majority. Like that. That goes way back. In other words, most people don't say anything. It's a small group that are loud, and they say a lot. So, but those loud mouths, they take it that what they're saying is what everybody says, right? But they don't understand. No, it's just a small group. So, bhakti is universal; it applies to everyone. And those who are willing to accept that point, then they can take advantage of that, whether they're silent or they're loud. It doesn't matter. But if they're opposed to the pure devotion, then they'll never understand. Right? Because the Muda is also silent, and he's not interested either. So, that. Someone may propose that since the definition mentions Krishnanushilanam, bhakti, also should be defined by using the words Krishna bhakti instead of just bhakti. In response to this, it may be said that the definition uses the word bhakti rather than the word Krishna bhakti, because in the devotional scriptures, the word bhakti alone is commonly used to indicate devotion to Krishna. Right? Because sometimes you get into, Prabhupada gave the mantra, Vrindaye Tulasi Devi, Priya Kesavashi, Vishnu bhakti, that's what's in the Shastra. We use it, isn't it? Because Krishna is Vishnu. Like that. It's got to be Krishna bhakti, otherwise that's a whole scene. It's a whole... like that. But the point is you use that, it's fine. But the point is it doesn't be that, because bhakti means to Krishna. Who else is there? It means there isn't anyone else. There's only Krishna. Right? When we say God is one, we mean that. So it means, bhakti means devotion to the Lord. There's only one Lord, so therefore it's Krishna bhakti. Yes.
When they say Shiva bhaktas, Ganesh bhaktas, all those guys,
it's devotion. Bhakti, you can see devotion, but then it's defined as Shiva Bhakta. Right? Because you have to say, if you say bhakti, that means Krishna. But otherwise, you have to say Shiva Bhakti and like those kind of things.
And also, Maharaj, this definition, Anya Vilashita Shunyam, it's very rare to find among the bhaktas of other demigods.
No. They want, because they want, that's what they want. They want all these things. So only those who are interested in pure devotion will use this. And when we say completely free, because we mentioned also the gyan, then it will be applied, it will be appreciated by those going to Vaikuntha, but it goes actually beyond that, because it includes that liberation is any of the forms of liberation. like that. While their movements are about specific Vaishnava liberations, like Madhvas, it's specifically about Sarupya. That's the perfection, gaining that form. Now you can talk to those who are more advanced and they'll understand beyond that. But otherwise, it's that. So they generally won't use this definition. You could say that this is a Braj definition. So that's why we would, Rupa Goswami would be given the So, section 2. That was section 1. There are three types of bhakti. Sadhana, bhava, and prema. Right? Because generally we tell it to put the bhava and prema together. But actually it's three. Right? Because bhava is not sadhana, but it's not prema. Right? So you need the three. Sadhana bhakti has two divisions, vaidhi and raganuga. Quote, let there be only two types of bhakti, sadhana and sadhya. Bhava should be included in sadhya bhakti, right? Because that's what it is. Why is it necessary to have three types? End quote. The answer is as follows. Later it will be said, right? Because it's very important when you're getting down to fine points. You have to be able to define that the bhava, it is not prema yet, but it has the situation in which prema can manifest. But the reason it's not there is because of the aspects that are, you haven't developed fully that one-pointed focus on Krishna. Like that. That's what you're doing. You're developing that. Does that make sense? So you can tell. Otherwise, then you get distractions.
What sense it says here that they qualify to see Krishna directly?
Where?
In the court?
Oh, we haven't gotten to it yet. Those who are called practitioners, sadhaka, who have developed rati for Krishna and are qualified to see Krishna directly, but who have not completely extinguished the anartas, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindal 2.1, 2.76. They're able to see Krishna, but it still hasn't come to that one-pointedness that is there in it, that qualifies for prema. That's why you see the different levels. It means to be able to see Krishna and work with him directly, you have to come to Shravana, oh, what is it? Smarana, Varana, no, Shravana, Varana, Smarana, what's the next one? Apandas, like that. I think sometimes it has a different name also, but generally, Apandas. So,
Bhavapandas, that's what they call it.
Bhavapandas. Bhavapandas, okay. So Bhavapandas, that point, then you can take part. But we see is, did Krishna just, once he started the Rasa dance, then everything went smoothly? No, why not? Pride.
Yeah.
So is that an anartha? It's not a material anartha, yeah. But at the same time, it's not prema. It's not a qualification that's there. It's not, in other words, that they're thinking I'm the most fortunate girl in the universe or cosmos, however big they're thinking, right? What does that have to do with Krishna? The cat. He just needs a hat. The one that you would hear on the tape, you're meeting the cat. See here, it's just like that. It says, practitioners who have developed that, they can qualify to see the cat directly. So all that time you're seeing there, now you're seeing.
One year, I've been wondering.
Where's the cat? That's the cat.
Are you heard on recording?
Yeah, yeah, because he'll come sit right here. See? You're advancing.
So, Pita Chandra, Jiva Goswami uses different terminologies to define. To distinguish between these persons and those who are perfected. He uses those who sees Krishna first time as like Siddhi. Defines them as Siddhi. And then those who know Krishna and then after a long separation they see Krishna again, they're categorized as Rudas.
Okay.
So in that way the kind of all the Anubhavas and all change. It's like different for both these categories of people.
Okay, what experience I'll gain? that Rudha, and then Rudukshu.
That is the Indian.
Yes, but which one's higher, which one's lower?
Rudha is higher and Siddha is the one who sees the first time is Siddha, one who already knows Krishna, and then after separation he gets to see Krishna.
Right.
That is called as Rudha.
Rudha. Okay. So
he differentiates between both these categories very specifically.
Yoga Rudha and Yoga Rudukshu. So Siddha is Rudukshu. Okay. Does that make sense? No.
You couldn't hear.
So he's saying that Jiva Goswami and Preeti Sandarbha, then he's differentiating between those who have seen Krishna, and then that inspires them to those who are qualified to be with, and then they have that separation, then they see Krishna again. That the Anubhavas that will be there between the two are different. So the first one is called Siddha, the second one is called Rudha. You know, it's like the yogi. You know, the Rukshu is the first six and the Arudha is the last two.
Right.
So then it's the same principle. It's now just on a much higher level. So that you're seeing the Lord, but you haven't come to that point where that absorption of the Lord, in other words, the possessiveness and all these haven't come to that stage yet. Because it's a matter of how deep that possessiveness is. Does that make sense? Yes. Like that. You remember
the example of Siddha? Is that right?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. That means they're there. They're meditating. They heard the Lord. That's Siddha. But then it'll develop. So it's just like the gopis. They come out. They see Krishna. They talk with Krishna. It starts the rasa dance. But then he goes away. Right. Then the pastimes to go through there, that separation, all that, then when they see in the next time, then we see we're on a different platform.
Right.
So all these things are going on, but we see is that they're technically explained, but the application within the Lord's pastimes and that within the whole devotional process, then it has a very, you know, it has a practical application. Right, so the analyzation is there, so we're aware of it. Then we can appreciate that it goes on. So then, otherwise, we think the gopis just went to the rasa dance, and then this happened. No, you're trying to bring them there because Krishna didn't leave Srimati Radharani, right? So her group is there because they're already on that perfectional. Is he used perfectional or he uses something else? Because perfectional can mean just you're on Brahma Bhuta.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, but whatever it is, it's a higher level. Well, the other ones, they're on that lower level, they have to get to that level. So by that association, then they're able to come to the point where that separation has some meaning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you have these levels. You have that Purva Rag, then you have this, then it just keeps going.
Yeah.
So only with Purva Rag can you get to Siddha. From Siddha, then, what is it? Arudha.
Yeah.
Right? Does that make sense? Then it'll get. Then with time, it'll get to Prema.
Yeah.
Okay.
Some devotees, they speculate and they think that our position as sadhaka, we can also call it Purva Rag. But actually, Srila Rupa Goswami, he says it technically is called Ayoga.
Yeah, what they're talking about is the experience when they see that bucket of halava or something.
So it's very different.
Very different, yeah. Because the Anubhavas are different and all that. The whole thing. What's the Udipans and all that. So that's why then we go as we go through. We'll see. Then these will come up. We're at the beginning. So we'll go through and we'll see through the sadhana and everything. We'll get up to prema. Then we'll start discussing the those aspects of the bhavas, right? Stai bhava, satika bhava, all these different aspects. So I think that the first part is all shraddha, basically shraddha to prema, right? Then the second part is about the vibhavas, right? Then it'll get into all these other aspects, you know, the third and the fourth.
He summarizes everything. In this
15
pages.
Okay. So it's all coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
They're going through the bindu. They're going through the bindu.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Right, so there's a distinction made here. So those on the platform of bhava and those on the platform of prema. So even within bhava, then there's stages that are getting you closer. In spite of the fact that bhava or rati has appeared, utpanna ratayaha, the obstacles have not been completely dissipated. Such persons are therefore classed as sadhakas. Right? They may be bhav sadhakas, but they're still sadhakas. They're distinguished from vaidhi sadhakas. Right. The obstacles have The obstacles have not been completely dissipated, right? They're over in the corner trying to get attention. Such persons are therefore classed as sadhakas. That means the cat's a sadhaka. Or we're disturbed by the cat, therefore we're sadhakas. Okay. Quote.
He's a grumpy
sadhaka. Okay. Not having extinguished all obstacles, samyan nair vignyam anu pagataha, means that there still remains a trace of some serious aparad, because the effects of aparad are very strong and long-lasting. So there's something that's left. So that's what I mentioned, is that Brahma-Bhuta means you've been freed from the conditioned nature, but it's not that the effect of having functioned in the material world is not still there. Right? The example is given of the smell of the hing in the hing box after the hing ends is gone. But still there's a fragrance. And so then you're removing that fragrance. So that's the whole unfolding of the Bauma-Lila. Is the pastimes in such a way that it can remove all that. Sorry? Yeah. In this condition, with even a trace of aparad that generates suffering, sadhya bhakti, prema, cannot appear. The qualities of the siddha bhakta, who has sadhya bhakti, are described as follows in the same section. Those who experience no suffering at all, who perform all actions while taking shelter of Krishna, and who always taste the happiness of continuous prema, are known as the perfected devotees. So they're using it here. So basically it's that as the thing goes, so they're the perfected, and then the bhav bhaktas are the sadhakas. Right? Then when you drop from, that's all within, that's all within the uttama category. Right? Then we drop below the uttama category, then the uttama category, they're the siddhas, or the ones on bhava, they're the siddhas. Yes. Right? And then below that, they're the sadhakas. Does that make sense? Because from that sadhaka, that'll bring us to the siddha of being on Brahma-Bhuta, being on bhava. But then there, we're a sadhaka trying to get to the platform of prema. And once you get to prema, then that whole consideration is gone. Yes?
Maharaj, we see this aspect of being the intermediate between one and another in all fields. So
in all?
All aspects.
Oh, yeah, all aspects. It's just like you have Uttama Bhakti, you have Kanista, you have the Madhyama. Right? So it's like, it always has that. You know, that each phase, even within the Kanista, you'll have the three sections. Someone just has faith and then associates with devotees is one level. One who takes up the bhajan, the practice like that, then that's another level. Then one who is actually working on trying to remove the anartas, that's then the highest level. So you're always going to have these three. Right? Because you always have sambandha, you always have prayojana, and you have the connection, which is abhideya. Right? That's why then before it was said cheshta, there must be endeavor. Different level of consciousness. But it's all in the same function. That's why when we understand these basic principles, then we're able to apply it on all levels. So first is just getting that we accept those principles. Right? But because we take them more as an external kind of form, then when we try to use those same principles on a higher level, we won't let them be used that way because the words mean a certain thing to us. because it's about us. It's not about what the, you know, what the acharyas are saying. So then that becomes an obstacle. So then the second is you have to be able to use these words in that variety of way and see the spectrum. That's the same thing, but at different spectrums. Right? Then one can appreciate. That's how you can appreciate someone junior, that devotion, someone senior, that devotion. Right? Because we're not looking at the mistakes, we're looking at what's devotional. Right? We're not worried about the mistakes. So we're following the devotion of those higher. We're not worried about mistakes. And we're encouraging those who are lower. We're not worried about mistakes. Yes, otherwise then there'll be opera. And then that, you know, as we see, it's long-lasting. So that's why aparad is... See, sin is not the big deal. We take it's the big deal. Aparad's the big deal. Because sin, one name can get rid of all the sin of the universe. But the point is, you can come to the spiritual world in your spiritual body and still the effect of aparad that you've done here can remain. But that by the pastimes, it will go away. But the point is you have to make that endeavor to try to work in a way under the direction of the advanced devotees to please Krishna. Those who experience no suffering at all, who perform all actions while taking shelter of Krishna, and who always taste the happiness of continuous prema, are known as the perfected devotees. Bhakti Rasamrita Sindha 2.1 2.80. Therefore, Bhava Bhakti cannot be included in Sadhya Bhakti, can't be included in prema. However, by no means can it be included in Sadhana Bhakti. Right? So that's why it's called Bhava Bhakti. Then we can say Bhav Sadhana, just so you know, but it's not just called Sadhana. Right? Because in this section, which defines Sadhana Bhakti, the goal of Sadhana Bhakti is described as Bhava Bhakti. Right? So by Sadhana Bhakti, that'll get you to Bhava. By Bhava Bhakti, that'll get you to Prema. Right? Therefore, it cannot be included in Sadhana Bhakti, since the goal of Bhava Bhakti is not to produce Bhava. Thus, it should be considered proper to classify Bhakti into three types, not two. Yes. No. Does that make sense? These are important, because otherwise you'll see is that people try to simplify that. The sahajiyas will do that. They'll try to simplify it down. Like that. Because it just makes it so much easier. Because that's the whole point. As soon as that they're rolling on the ground in ecstasy, they consider that they're sadhyas. But they haven't even reached sadhana yet. You know?
Right.
Yes.
So we say sadhana, bhav sadhana, and prema?
Yeah, well, generally, yes. I'm saying only when we're discussing Bhav, then we can look at the sadhana there. But otherwise, you just would describe it as sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti in this context. Okay?
Part. And also, as we can define it as sadhana bhakti, siddha bhakti, and sadhya bhaktas, the bhaktas.
And what was the third one?
Sadhya bhakti, siddha bhakti, and the sadhakas.
Yeah, okay. Sadhana, siddha, because generally when we say siddha, we mean that. But you see, he also mentioned they're perfected devotees, which means siddha, and he's talking about the prema bhaktis here.
Yes.
So just to be clear, when you say bhava bhakti, then you know it means rati. Okay. Like that. So, section 3. Adau shraddha tata sadhu sango ta bhajana kriya. Tato nantan nidvriti syat tato nishta ruchis tata. Tata shaktis tato bhavas tata prema bhudhan chati sadakanam ayam prema pra durbhava bhavet kramaha. First, there is association with devotees, by which one gets faith. Right? Because you get faith only in the association of devotees. It doesn't happen without that. Then one associates with the devotees who learn the scriptures, to learn the scriptures, and then practices bhakti. So by association, you get faith. Then by taking up that association to learn this, then you're learning the scriptures, you're learning the process. Right? Then you'll take up and then you'll practice that. Right? The anarthas are then destroyed. Right? Because by practicing bhakti, especially as the faith is fixed, then the anarthas are destroyed. Right? Steady bhakti without confusion follows. Desire for the Lord, so that faith that this is what's going to get, that's what destroys the anarthas, that makes you steady in devotional service. Right? Because if you think other things are going to of value, then one won't be steady because you'll be pursuing those other things. But when you have the faith that only bhakti can satisfy the soul, it's inclusive of whatever is necessary for the jiva is included in the devotional process. That faith will destroy all the anarthas. One will become fixed in devotional service. Right? So, desire for the Lord, ruchi, appears. Right? So it's a desire. Not just the taste. And I'm getting a taste, but it's a desire, therefore the taste. This is followed by spontaneous desire for the Lord, asakti. Right? So there's desire, then it's just that it has that you know, the budding of the emotion. This becomes bhava, and then prema. This is the progression for manifesting prema for those performing sadhana bhakti. Right? That's how it will progress. Right? And so then, yeah. Though there are many steps in the progression of bhakti, the most common sequence is stated in two verses. In the beginning, adao, by hearing the scriptures in association with the devotees, one attains faith, shraddha. Shraddha means trust or confidence. Then, after faith appears, again association with devotees takes place, sarusanga, for learning how to practice bhakti. Nishtha means continuous bhakti without confusion. Ruchi means desire for the Lord, but with direction by the intellect, right? So that's the difference. Asakti means desire which is natural or spontaneous without intellectual direction. You want to do, you analyze, you see this is better than that. It means the taste for, you know, in association with devotees, chanting holy names is better than, so you have that taste, but it still has that intellectual aspect, yes.
So the first stage where one associates with devotees are like the four kinds of devotees mentioned in Bhagavad Gita.
Yes, yes, like that. It's just so when you, before you've committed yourself to Krishna consciousness. You know, so when it's coming, you know, it's like you've joined the Hare Krishna club and you go and hang out and all that, but you haven't really made a determination. But what, by that association, then now you faith that this is the process you want to do. Now you associate to learn about devotional service. Before you go, because it's nice, it's cool, it's interesting, and nice prasad, and, you know, like that. You definitely look cooler than they do. They're in bed sheets, and hey, I got, you know, like that. You know, so, you know, so like that. So we see is that, that what he's saying here is that there's desire for the Lord, so that's where in its more direct sense, bhava has extended down, but it still has that intellect. So it's ruchi. Then when it goes to the point where it's spontaneous without the intellectual direction, it's natural, but it doesn't have the intensity. So he says, but then naturally this becomes bhava. Because that intensity will grow, then it just goes into bhava, right? And then by following the path, by bhava and the association of the Lord's associates, that becomes prema, right? So just like you associate with devotees before, gain faith. By associating with the eternal associates, you'll develop prema, right? So Prabhupada defines prema as mature faith, when it's just all there is Krishna. So. Yeah. By this, one should understand the difference between nishta and ashakti. Or asakti, excuse me. In Bengali, all three S's are said as talavya. Yeah, so the Murdinya and the Dantya are all said as like that. They commented on that when we were in South chanting the mantras. They said, very nice, everything's nice, but you're saying it with the Bengali pronunciation, because we'd say all the shas the same. Yeah. Okay, so clear on that? That's the third section. So you can see he's taken certain verses, and from that he's bringing out so that you understand these are the essential verses. 4. There are 64 angas of bhakti. The first 10 are rules to be followed. 1. Taking shelter of Guru. 2. Then after initiation, acquiring knowledge. Footnote 4. This comment echoes the traditional Vedic system of initiation, in which a person receives Vedic initiation, Upanayana, or Vedic Gayatri Mantra. This qualifies him to study the Vedas. This tradition continued even with the Pancharatrik initiation and study. However, when Nam Sampkirtan became prominent, the acquirement of Diksha before Siksha does not have the same importance. Right? So, therefore, taking shelter of Guru, probably you see he's talking about is Vartma Pradarshak. So it's like what we're talking here before, is that you're associating with the devotees. By hearing scriptures, associate one attains faith. Then one takes up, then that gets that trust. And then after that faith, again associates with devotees for learning how to practice bhakti. Right? So you have that taking shelter of guru. Then in the Vedic, you would actually have to, there would have to be an initiation. But we see is here in the Bhagavad line that it's just taking shelter of the instruction. Right? You first just like, then you take shelter. Then it progresses naturally. 3. Service to guru with respect. Because otherwise it's there, you like to hang out and stuff like that. 4. Following the rules according to the scriptures as approved by the acharyas. Right? So we don't just follow rules not by their direction, but it has to be how the acharyas have given us. That's important. Then 5. Inquiry about the method of worship. Right? So you've heard, now you should inquire, so that you know how to do. So any doubts that are there, how to apply everything. 6. Renunciation of enjoyment to gain Krishna's mercy. So then we try to control the senses, engage in Krishna's service, and that gets Krishna's mercy. 7. Residing in Dwarka or other holy places and hearing glorification of holy places. So in the Dham, connected with the temples, making your house into a place of worship. 8. Accepting only what is necessary as food, etc., in order to continue practicing bhakti. Right? You don't take more than what you require, because more than what you require, that has to be gained, that's work, it has to be maintained, it has to be applied. Right? Because otherwise, if you have tons of money and don't use it, you're called a fool. So therefore, how much you're going to actually use, only make that much. Right? Because more than that means you're going to be taking away from time that you can be using in devotional service. Right? 9. Observing the Ekadasi Vrata. 10. Giving respect to Ashvata, Tulsi, Dhatri, cows, Brahmins, and Vaishnavas. Right? So in other words, what's connected to the Lord. So basically for us, we worship Tulsi, that takes care of the Dhatri, Ashvata, like that. The second 10 are things to be avoided. Yes? Yes.
And usually in practice, it's not really like that. It's like the Disha Guru must tell me add some value.
It's just a matter of one associates with devotees and one will naturally develop Siksha Gurus. Then whoever amongst those Siksha Gurus becomes prominent, generally that traditionally that would be who would become the Diksha Guru. So it's just a matter of if it's you saying you added, it just meant you had to wait, it was the Siksha expanded until that Siksha Guru got included, and then you took initiation from them. Because the first position is there a Siksha Guru. Because if the instruction doesn't match, then how will it work as a relationship? Because the relationship is based on Siksha. Like that. I mean, you can do it that they smile nicely or something, but that's may not take you as far as you want. Okay, so that's the first 10. So those are the things that need to be accepted, right? The next 10 are going to be what's to be avoided. So we'll get into that tomorrow. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinda ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandini.